it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, happy to welcome you back on the show. DBJ is run off to a meeting. Danny Garcia, our producer. We're on the air at 11:30 Saturday morning from Philadelphia, 3:30 kickoff. ACC's off to a good start, 4-2 in the ACC Big Ten Challenge last week. Oh, they don't have that in football officially, but at any rate, ACC went 4-2 against the Big Ten last week. So that's good. ACC's had its share of victories against the Southeastern Conference as well. Joining us now from the ACC Network, from SiriusXM, and the voice of the Atlanta Falcons. Did I miss any of your jobs, Wes Durham?
I think you got me covered, Z. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Trying to got a hell of a rainstorm going on here in South Florida. So lightning bolts everywhere. At any rate, what are your thoughts of Miami so far?
I'm thrilled for them. It's actually pretty funny. I was talking with some folks last weekend when we were at Clemson, and I was remarking that, you know, sometimes we anticipate that when, you know, in the case of Miami, Mario Cristobal comes back home and, you know, things go, everybody's excited and rightly so, right? Yep. And it doesn't go well. People all of a sudden, you know, don't think about the fact that it may take some time, right, to kind of flip the switch a little bit. And we were talking about Louisville being obviously, you know, they were way ahead of Indiana at the time the comment was made. And I said, yeah, but that's a different situation than Miami. Jeff Brohm was from there. He knew the process. He had been approached about the job, as you all remember, a few years ago when they hired Scott Satterfield. I said, Mario Cristobal comes back, and it's a different landscape. I said, you know, he had been at FIU. It, you know, it didn't end well for a variety of reasons. And I said, so he comes back, and, you know, he puts together what he thinks can go right now. And I said, you know, don't be surprised that they're playing well now, because – I'm not sure that, and you and Don would be the ones to talk about this better than anybody else, I think, and that the perspective of injury crept into what your storyline was so much last year. And now not only have stayed relatively healthy across the board, which is important, but everybody understands everybody better in year two than they did in year one. And I think that's a big factor. And, oh, by the way, the quarterback's playing at an incredibly high level. And defensively, you're a lot better than people realize. And that's the other thing that I think is going to be discovered. When you beat Temple, you have a week off, and then Georgia Tech comes rolling in, you know, to start October. I think a lot of people are really going to realize just kind of how Miami fits in the bigger landscape of where this is going.
You know, Wes, I think the other thing with Mario, and you might know this off the top of your head, but if you look at the overall stats of the last 5 years, I think Miami's still number three in terms of record in the ACC.
Right.
But it's a pedestrian record. And I think this was on one of the shows at home. Miami is, 14-9 at home, 15-9 on the road against the ACC. I think Mario comes in here and he starts evaluating his players, and he looks at it and says, all right, we can scrape by trying to battle Carolina, and we can scrape by Georgia Tech and Virginia, scrape by Duke, but that's not why we're here. We are here to beat these guys soundly and,
sure.
Oh, by the way, take on Alabama and Georgia and those schools.
That's it.
In order to do that, we need a different style and a different level of player, and that's what has happened.
No question. And I think the other thing, too, is with the way that the landscape is built these days, Joe, you can do it pretty quick, right? You don't have to recruit and develop in 2 years and then hope the third year hits. You can, with the portal and, you know, transfers and things of that issue, you can change the game a little bit. And, again, I'll go back to the health of the quarterback. That's certainly a huge piece of this. You've got terrific depth, not good depth. You got terrific depth when it comes to running the football and catching the football. Restrepo's healthy, right? I mean, that's a huge piece. Colby Young has burst on this scene. Jacoby George is off to a great start. Your special teams are buttoned up. And now all of a sudden, hey, by the way, you know, the one game that everybody was watching 2 weeks ago, you stone cold punched them in the mouth. And now the win of that game almost sets the table going forward, right? And that's the perspective Miami's had a harder time to get to, with the exception of the one-year coach Rick's team was undefeated in November and things of that nature. And that's the part about this where I think now, and I said this to a lot of people, I may have said it to you when we saw each other in July, the ACC was going to play measurable football in September. It had a chance to play tangible football in October and impactful football in November. And now, the way things have gone in September, you know, they've done the right thing there. Now we're going to get to the month that's measurable, and then we're going to get to the month that's impactful. And I have no reason to believe that Miami won't be a part of that when we get there. And if they do, that'll be great for everybody involved in this process for sure.
Got a couple of big games in the league this week with some interesting storylines. Obviously, FSU and Clemson, it's almost a playoff game, certainly for Clemson. I'm looking at that game and I'm thinking to myself, man, I think Florida State's got Clemson on the edge, on the perimeter. How do you see that game?
I think you're right. I think there's a lot to like about where Florida State is, you know, so far. I think the one thing that keeps coming back to me is, you know, I start looking at where, you know, Clemson is offensively. I had them last Saturday night against Florida Atlantic. I feel awful for the Thompson kid who tore his ACL and so forth. But, you know, they had some playmakers that if they don't have the injury at quarterback, Clemson's defense might get stressed by LaJonte Wester or somebody of that nature. But for me now, the question is, how does Florida State handle this moment, Joe? Clemson's right. been there. Yeah. Clemson's got a culture of being there. And, yeah, these may not be the Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, you know, Christian Wilkins Clemson Tigers, but these are still, you know, all highly thought of football players for the most part. The one thing that I'm going to be interested to see is how good Florida State is defensively, because if they can take Klubnik off his point, they've got a real chance to win the ball game and maybe win it impressively. I think Clemson has to be very, very judicious with the way they handle themselves offensively, because I think defensively it's a pretty good football game. Was Travis banged up, you know, a lot in the game at BC? I'm not sure about that. He came back and played. But Keon Coleman's got to touch it more for Florida State, right? He can't just have, you know, a carry on the ground and a catch in the air. He's got to become a bigger factor. So I think it's a really interesting chess match, to be honest with you. I'm excited to see it, and I'm glad I'm not working until Saturday night so I can watch it.
Yeah, I'm with you, though. I do think Clemson's going to rely on the history of their culture, and there's a lot to be said about that, and it might come through for them. It just might. We'll see. Are you at Pittsburgh? You have the North Carolina Pitt game on Saturday night?
I do, yeah. It's the second year in a row that Tim and I have had the game. We had it last year in Chapel Hill, and it feels like this is, after losing two straight, Cincinnati, and certainly last week at West Virginia, it feels like that, you know, if Pitt's going to be a factor in this thing, they're going to have to throw a knockout punch on Saturday night to Carolina. And Carolina's trying to go 4-0 for the first time since 97 in the first iteration of Mack Brown.
Wow. Well, we're going to be there in a couple of weeks. Pittsburgh can't throw the football.
And not running it very well either, Joe. But defensively, their numbers are good. The question is Cincinnati, who, you know, beat Pitt and then lost to Miami of Ohio, or West Virginia, who lost to Penn State and, you know, beat Pitt last week? You know, where is Pitt in terms of their offensive, the ability to reignite what they are offensively? Djurkovic it's a head-scratcher, man. I mean, it's way under 50% passing, quarterback rating less than 35 at this point after three games. And, you know, in terms of stunners in ACC football through 3 weeks, I'd put Pitt near the top of the list.
There's another game in the league that I'm going to bring it up just for our fans. I want them to hear about these teams because, one, Georgia Tech is coming here in 2 weeks.
Right.
I saw the stat today. Georgia Tech's been penalized 5 times, so they're trying to find a way to win. Haynes King's done a pretty good job for them at quarterback. He's the number one quarterback in the league right now. And then Wake Forest, they crack me up because Dave Clawson always finds something. And right now, his team's got like a million sacks, 16 sacks in 3 games.
Yeah. Well, they're better – The thing about it is, Joe, they've never had the run, right? They've gotten it to about 7-0, right? Or 6-0, or maybe 6-1, or 7-1. They've never had the run to take that thing to double digits into November. And to me, that's kind of where, you know, Wake Forest is from a standpoint of, okay, when do they change the way people think about them? And in some respect, it could be this year, although they and Duke, ironically, who's off to an undefeated start as well, have the hardest conference schedules. So the game Saturday night with Georgia Tech is indeed a measuring stick, more so for Wake Forest than I think Georgia Tech. We all understand the deck that Brent Key's been dealt, and obviously he went 4-4 in the 8 games last year, and he's got a very difficult schedule. I mean, you think about the non-conference. They played Ole Miss. They played, you know, to start the year, they played Louisville. They, you know, they beat South Carolina State. They're going to play Bowling Green next week, and then they're going to play the league in Georgia to finish, right?
Right.
And their league schedule features Clemson, North Carolina, Boston College, you guys, of course, on the 7th, Syracuse at home before they play Georgia. So for me, for Wake Forest, it becomes really important because after Georgia Tech, Wake has a bye week, and then they're at Clemson, at Virginia Tech in consecutive weeks, and then they host Pitt and Florida State before they go to Duke on a short week. I feel the same way about Duke I feel about Wake Forest. I think they're incredibly well coached. I think they're deeper than people think. And in Dave Clawson's case, I don't know why anybody didn't think Mitch Griffiths wouldn't be good. Because, you know, yeah, John Walford, he was good. Jamie Newman was good. Sam Hartman was good. Why wouldn't Mitch Griffiths be good? You're right, though, about the defense. And a guy like Jasheen Davis has really stepped to the forefront. And, you know, they haven't lived in the transfer portal a lot, Joe, but what they've done has been impactful in the transfer portal with the kids they've signed. So I agree with you. I think Wake Forest is the one that, you know, maybe some in the conference are sleeping on. I know nationally people are sleeping on.
I'm surprised somebody hasn't taken a better run at Clawson and hired him away. At any rate, that's a conversation for another show.
Sure.
If anybody knows the answer to this one, it's you. Stanford, Cal, SMU coming into the league, your stance on it, and how does it work next year? How do they incorporate? We just redid all the scheduling.
I know we did.
Like a year ago, so what happens now?
I don't know. It's a really good question. It's awkward. I'll be the first to admit that, you know, and I'm not a traditionalist by any stretch of the imagination. My dad may have been, but I was not. I understood the move from 9 to 12 and certainly understood the move from 12 to 15 in the case of adding Notre Dame. This one is a little more difficult to draw, if you will. I understand where people are coming from a connectivity piece. I think it's really difficult on sports not named football and basketball. Stanford is in the midst of a football downswing, obviously. Cal, Justin Wilcox, pretty good football coach. I just don't know where they are from a financial situation. It's been reported they're $400-some million in debt, Joe.
Yeah.
And they're going to get what they call calimony from UCLA at some point, as much as $10 million a year from UCLA for, you know, divorcing the Pac-12.
Right.
The SMU situation, I'll tell you this now. Rhett Lashley, as you know, is the coach at SMU. I'm a fan. I have been since I first met him years ago, long before he was at Miami. He's done a nice job. They're offensively geared. And they're going to throw it around. And I don't know how Coach Cristobal feels about it or anybody else in the league, because quite frankly, in a year I haven't had a chance to ask. But it opens up the door a little more in Texas, and I don't think that's a bad thing in this league. I'm okay with adding the concept of going into Texas and being a factor in that state. The California thing and how we do it and all those things, I'm going to have to sit in a room with smarter people to figure that one out. But obviously we're going to move forward with it, and I think it's going to be really interesting.
Everybody wants to know about Notre Dame, and here's my position on Notre Dame. You ready?
Okay, sure.
They want to be independent because they want to play a broader schedule. They are currently playing how many ACC games?
Five and it's my understanding that their series with Stanford will not count as one of those five.
So that's my point.
So they're going to end up playing six.
Right. So my point would be this. With these conferences expanding, Big 20, the Big 4, Big 12, the Big 10, SEC, I would think they have to go to more conference games. Otherwise, I don't know why you expand. You expanded to have great matchups. So I would think that they would be pressured into more conference games. Therefore, my position would be, maybe I'm wrong, who's Notre Dame going to play? If I'm one of those teams, Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan, the guys that used to play Notre Dame, USC, I say, thanks, but no thanks. Not doing it anymore.
Yeah. I think that
which would then force them into the league.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a different way to certainly put Notre Dame in the ACC. I mean, there are a handful of different ways. I think what we have to do in some respect is we have to step back and watch this unfold. And I say that not as somebody that doesn't want Notre Dame in the ACC. I think it'd be great if they were in the ACC. But I don't think that anybody really understands how this is going to work when we go to 12. I think we have ideas. I think things are on paper. But, Joe, we haven't seen that sorted out yet for the playoff, right? We haven't seen the impact of 8 or 9 conference games, right?
Right.
We haven't seen the impact of some of the crossover non-conference games. Like, for instance, the 4 schools in the ACC that play an SEC team at the end of the regular season. Remember, when we played football in the pandemic, the SEC called those games off. So if they did it during the pandemic, what would be – but now we're all in the same television roof, right, with ESPN and ABC next year. So do those games stay? Do those games change? Is, like, you and I know about more made-for-television basketball that's occurred over the years, right?
That's right.
We have some made-for-TV football, but we don't have a lot. Do we get to a point now where, hypothetically, the ACC and the SEC, and I'll throw in the Big 12 because they have an ESPN-dominant contract, do we see more interaction with those three conferences in non-conference football? In other words, the games that you've become comfortable or accustomed to playing, say, at Miami, an FCS opponent, or an HBCU, or, you know, a G5 team, or whatever the case may be, and that actually outlines the three you've played so far. Which one of those is going to go away? Well, it won't be the Power 5 non-conference game. It won't be the Texas A&Ms of the world. But which one is it going to be, and what's it going to go away instead of, right? And I think every school has to make a conscientious decision. Wake Forest, if their schedule is hard, they have a 35,000-seat stadium. They've done great from an attendance perspective in the last couple of years. But is Wake Forest going to get out of hosting my school, Elon, to start the year, and instead get on the road and go play at, I don't know, Utah? I don't know that that's going to happen. I think what we have to do is we have to understand – where the financials are, and what the commitment level is going to be in some of this. And we honestly don't know. We think we know from looking at the paperwork, but we don't know what the television deals are going to be, and we certainly don't know the number of conference games. Because I've had people tell me, if we're going to play some of these games that we're playing, we ought to just play 9 conference games. And it's hard to disagree with them on it, but I'm not coaching. I'm just the broadcaster,
I
like
understand.
You are.
Right, but yeah, I'm with you. You know, Georgia playing Ball State doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah. And the UT networks, Martin, UAB, right. Ball State, and Georgia Tech, that's their 4 non-conference.
Right. No, nobody wants to see that, and the networks is going to pay them a lot of money that helped bring in Texas and Oklahoma. Doesn't want to see that. They want to see Georgia play Oklahoma. They want to see Georgia play Texas and Alabama.
I think that, and last spring the SEC passed on going to 9 conference games, right?
Yeah.
So –
well, they're all afraid that they're going to be tagged with more losses.
Aha, see? But that's what I'm saying. Because in the 12-team playoff, we don't know how many losses eliminate you. We know in the 4. We don't know in the 12.
Yeah, I think that people are going to have to get used to that in the near future, that 9-3 is going to be a really good year. Because that's what the networks want. The networks want it to look like the NFL, in my opinion.
Oh, I think the TV partners, and I'm employed by one, but I would tell you, I think the TV partners love the college football. I think the fact that Miami and Florida State are playing well and having great seasons, I think the Colorado story, I think the potential of Oregon, Washington, USC, Utah out west. I think all those teams being factors, I think that's a good thing for college football. And I heard you mention before I came on about the, you know, the ACC's record against like the SEC. I think it's good that there's unrest a little bit in the Southeastern Conference, to be honest with you. I think it's good for the national product. The question I have is it Texas in the Big 12, and is it just Michigan in the Big 10? And Ohio State's got to play well. Ohio State plays for more than Ohio State on Saturday night at South Bend, I'll tell you that much.
That's right. All right, well, it's always good to catch up with you. You'll be in Pittsburgh on Saturday. Where do you go on Sunday? Where are the Falcons?
I am in Detroit. So
Pittsburgh to Detroit. Is that a Sunday morning flight?
A little 6:30 flight Sunday morning, yes, sir.
All right, very good. All right, I don't have to worry about that stuff until November.
I hope we see you in a couple of weeks, maybe for Georgia Tech. How's that?
Sounds good. Sounds great. Love to see you. Thanks for being on the show.
Anytime, Joe. Be well. Tell Don hello.
I will. All right. Great Wes Durham joining us from the ACC Network. We ran over a little bit, but we'll catch things up. Thanks to Danny Garcia. Thanks to Coach Cristobal. Thanks to Tim Reynolds, Don Bailey Jr. We got Rewind coming up later this week. And then on Saturday, we'll talk to you from Lincoln Financial Field. Kickoff at 3:30, on the air at 11:30. Thanks for joining us tonight. Have a very pleasant and safe evening. Good night.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.